Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller.
That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, I said like you like it or not. That's when it got wheels off.
David Wax of the David Wax Museum is an artist I've been lucky enough to watch evolve over the years, over the last 12 years. And I admire him so much as a guy. His wife, Suze, is a veritable force of nature, an incredible singer, violin player, fiddle player even, among other stuff. They have a couple of very sweet little kids. I care about these guys a lot. You know, I've watched them from when they were really very first starting out. But that said, things came up in this interview that I didn't know. And I love doing these Wheels Off interviews because no matter how well I know someone or how long I've known someone, when I, you know, put them through the rigorous exercise of the Wheels Off experience, something always comes out that surprises me. I think that you will enjoy this. David is someone who thinks a lot. I mean, he went to Harvard, for goodness sake. But he's somebody who is living an examined life, and I feel like he's pretty realistic about, you know, when he's dealing with his own sort of neuroses and complications. And then I do also think that he appreciates that he's a talented guy. That sounds bad. We should be allowed to appreciate that we are talented, right? That's a good thing. I'm just saying that he went all in on a life in music with the help of his partner, Suze, and I'm so glad they did. He could have done a lot of things. They could have done a lot of things. But the music world would have been poorer for their absence, as would have been Wheels Off. So I'm so glad to have now in the Wheels Off stable, the great David Wax. Welcome to Wheels Off, David Wax. How are you?
Great. It's great to see you, Red. Thanks so much for having me.
Man, it's great to see you. I've missed you guys, and it looks like you've got a sunshiny artistic room. Where are you right now?
This is our little attic studio in our home in Charlottesville, Virginia. It kind of, for a long time, was just like a space where we had a bunch of beds where we would host bands or Airbnb our house while we were on tour. And so finally, when we were here with enough consecutive time, you know, days in a row, we're like, we're going to have to just make the space into where we can do our live streams, make it cozy, get all our instruments set up, and build a little home studio up here. So we've done all that this year.
And you've been pretty aggressive about doing live streams and keeping a constant stream of stuff going. I'm super proud of you. I think it's great. I love how positive you guys are about it. What's that been like for you?
Well, I guess that first I'll say that means a lot coming from you, because I think maybe you've been even more aggressive about it than we have. I mean, for the early days, we were doing that too, of just three shows a week is what we did for the first couple of months. And I think that, I mean, as I'm sure you're finding, like, people who are watching and tuning into the live streams, it's a lifeline for a lot of people right now that are really isolated. And so we've just felt grateful that anybody wants to come and hang out on the screen with us, and just that the songs are meaningful for people. And for us, I think, as I don't know, we've learned a lot as musicians, just kind of like going back through our old songs, learning covers, like digging back into all the Spanish songs they used to sing. I don't know. I've watched a couple of yours, and for me to like to do the, I was really excited to see you do Hitchhike to Rome. And I was kind of like, you know, it was like, I just try to remember how excited I was to see that. And that there are people that must feel that way when they come and see our shows and we play these older songs. And so I have to kind of remember, because sometimes we just like, we're doing it every week and it's like, can we, you know, it places certain stresses on us. It's like its own new art form.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd love to talk to you more about this maybe. And then, you know,
I know, no. But it is funny, right? Because to do what we do, even in the best of times, in the before times, like you have to tell yourself a story, right? Like there's a reason I'm up on stage and you're all sitting there looking at me and you all paid money. Like it's a weird mind thing trick that you have to constantly do. And it's much harder when you're looking into a HD camera.
Yeah. And I feel like we rely a lot on each other.
Yeah.
And kind of like pick each other up if one's not feeling it that night. I was really impressed. Just like, it seemed like you just had a lot that you wanted to get across. And you kind of like had the stories, kind of like could the songs would kind of lead to the next story, and you kind of like had a momentum that you have built into your shows. You're, you know, have honed it, and so we definitely like rely a lot on just like talking to each other, and kind of having that help us kind of not feel so awkward about it.
That is pretty great, and that's one of the things I've loved so much about just watching you guys over the years, the way that you. The two of you together as a married couple, by the way, we're talking about Suze, David's wife and musical partner. And you guys have been able to like keep your band going and have great momentum and make record after record, great records, build fans, tour incessantly, have kids. And the fact that you're able to do it together, I mean, it's really inspiring.
Oh, thanks. I mean, it's a testament to a lot of parts of our relationship and creative collaboration. I think that, there are challenges when we're trying to do so many of those different things together, but I think that, I don't know. I mean, Suze has a lot of wisdom and I think has a much more holistic and balanced view about life in general. So that there's that already that kind of like cancels out, but just is a great yin and yang to kind of like my drive and ambition.
Yeah.
And into the, you know, sometimes that there's a lot of things that can suffer because of that. And
yeah.
And so I think we have that, we balance each other out in that way. And I think that, just anytime you're kind of trying to build something, to kind of lean on each other's strengths and weaknesses and kind of, you know, just the way any partnership or relationship, but it's so intertwined in our case of, I don't know, this year though, I've felt like, it's even felt like this real aperture, this opening in terms of our creative collaboration. We just got Suze's new record mastered. And so to like have her first real solo record of songs that she wrote, and for me to get to be in a real supportive role, just like to engineer the record and to help co-write a couple things, but really just as a cheerleader and supporter. And we just did this we've just on the last song of this other project where she would come up with almost all the melodies and I would write the lyrics, and it's all her voice. I think it's going to be a Wax Museum record, but she's singing every song and it's like layers of her vocals. And we're having so much fun. I'm feeling like, wow, that we've been doing this together for 14 years. And now it's like, there's still so much richness in terms of learning about each other as musicians and kind of even a greater appreciation of what the other has to offer, I think, and how much is still untapped. So I feel really fortunate and kind of continually inspired by her and just like getting to make music with her.
Well, that's really beautiful. And I know you well enough, and you just addressed this a little bit, but I should officially start with my big question number one, which is, what are you working on right now? What creative project are you working on, and how does it light you up?
Well, for me, I usually have to have a lot of different irons in the fire, and I think I thrive on just having all those different things going at once. So it's always been kind of, and especially now, I think, because I've just appreciated how much energy I was spending on tour logistics and just like touring with the family and where everybody was going to stay tonight, and just like to have that lifted off of me this last year has opened up so much space for other things. Because I guess I think of creativity as, or like some part of me is honing something that I know I'm good at and continually kind of writing songs for the band in a particular way and trying to grow it and become a better songwriter in that way. But that's like, okay, I know kind of what works and how I can produce material in that vein. And I feel like this year has felt so exciting because I felt like I've been able to just experiment more and get stranger and like doing that, writing these songs for this project with Suze to sing the lead vocal on all of them. Like that's just felt so generative, and it's just felt like a different, like to get to write for her voice more. And to kind of, we've been thinking about those songs as, I think there's especially something when she layers her vocals, it's so soothing. And so it's like, and I think people are really needing that right now. Something that's just like deeply spiritually comforting. And so to write a batch of songs in that vein, in almost a different voice than I've written before. And we're with a great collaborator, Anthony DaCosta, is producing that for us. And I've also found this, one of my favorite collaborators over the years is Alex Spiegelman, who's a horn player in Brooklyn. He's played with us and toured with us over the years. And we started making a record at the beginning of the pandemic. And so we just have finished that. That's about to come out next month. And as soon as we finished it, we just started the next one. And so just to have a collaborator like that, that I can just get weird with and just kind of try to reimagine the whole way I'm writing. And to like, okay, I know I write songs like this and this is how I do it. Like to try to kind of question all those assumptions that I work under and to try to think about new ways to play with words and sounds and kind of getting comfortable in the studio for the first time. So I feel jazzed up by that collaboration. That's kind of one of the things I'm thinking about and working on a lot right now is these songs with Alec.
That's amazing. And you're really like hands-on with the knobs now. Like you're recording. Are you getting good at Pro Tools or Logic or whatever?
Yeah, I'm doing Logic.
Yeah. Wow.
I avoided it for years. I've been doing this like you since I was 13. You know, I've just been writing songs and performing in bands. And I think that there used to be more barriers where there was just like, you know, fancy studio and all this equipment, and it just seemed like, okay, well, there's a pro that's going to do that. So that's an expertise that I don't have. Why would I want to spend the time when there's just people that are so much better at that or have that? You know, I just didn't think of myself as a producer ever. But yeah, I think I just felt like if we're going to be here, and I don't know how long we're going to be here in our house, I just thought, yeah, I had no more excuses. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the reasons I'd come up with for why I shouldn't learn how to do it. And they've made it so easy now. I don't know. It's so user-friendly. And then to have these collaborators where I can kind of, before I learned how to do one step, I could kind of send it to Alec or Anthony and get them to kind of help me comp it or to make it sound good. I don't like, there's just so, the tools are so advanced now.
Yeah.
That if you can get a decent capture, a great mixer or a great producer can do so much with it.
And how did you just watch YouTube videos? Did you have friends walk you through it? How'd that work?
Yeah, a lot of YouTube.
Asking for a friend here.
Yeah, a lot of YouTube videos. I think like screen shares really helped because we couldn't like, I think if I could sit down with an engineer or producer now in a room, I could learn. I would just like in an hour, they'd blow my mind. But I can do that on screen share with someone if they can carve out an hour just to like look at what I'm doing. I think, you know, a friend can give me 10 pieces, like 10 little things I'll write down, and then it'll just like, yeah, it blows my mind. It's just like, oh, I didn't even realize I could do that. Or it's just like, I don't know. I think that there's something so intuitive about it. And I think I've been in the studio enough, and it's kind of like just learning to trust myself a little, trust my ears a little bit more, I don't have to answer all the questions. You know, sometimes it's just like getting to try a lot of the songs I've been working on recently. Like they're not written yet. Normally I'd have always gone to the studio and like have it written and just like have, I don't know, it's otherwise it's so stressful to get in the studio and think about all the money you're spending and everybody's time and everybody's watching you. And so to just not feel like I'm under the gun in that way, and to be able to like just get a strange sound on my vocal and just experiment with lyrics, and to feel like, oh, the studio is a tool and it's an instrument, and it's so generative. So yeah, I would love to see what you'd do if you kind of go fully into that. Are you thinking about it? Are you?
Oh, I've got a Logic set up and a good mic, and you know, like you, no more excuses, but I come up with excuses.
Yeah. I mean, doing all the shows, I found that when we were doing so many shows that there was so much prep for the live streams. And so that we've kind of, now we did it to once a week, and we're kind of trying to slow it down a little bit more than that so that we can open up space for other things.
Yeah. It takes a lot of bandwidth, but you know, it's once again, if you want to do something, you make time to do it. There's no real excuses. So I love the image of you as a 13-year-old, because to me, you're such an old soul. But I know that it's funny to think that at some point you were like a child prodigy. And so I wonder, going back to those earliest days for you, do you remember a moment when you knew you were going to be a musician or a songwriter or a performer? How early did that happen? Was there an epiphany moment?
Yeah, I think there were different moments, but some pretty clear ones in my mind. Hearing the White Album, and like especially hearing Rocky Raccoon, I remember just kind of like a lightning bolt. It's like, I want to do that. I want to make a world and kind of inhabit a character and tell a story like that. And just how transportive that was for me. Just like that song in particular, but just hearing the White Album in general, wanted me to make records. I was like, that's what I want to do.
How old were you?
That's when I was probably, 12 or 13.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
At some point, my cousin and I, Jordan, we were playing, you know, I mean, we were both playing piano and kind of clarinet and like very cool things like that. Church music, mm-hmm. and music. And his older brother, Mark, had a punk band, and we went and saw him, and he was an incredible performer. He's like a very theatrical person, but he's not much of a, like not a trained musician by any means, but he was just like owning it. And we were like, man, if Mark, who doesn't play an instrument or sing really, if he can do it and looks so cool like that, I mean, can't we do that? Can't we, like, we actually like practice and, you know, so Mark really paved the way for us to be like, there was no barrier to entry.
Did he stick with it?
He went in the theater direction.
Okay.
For many, many years, which was a great direction for him. He's extremely talented. But Jordan and I both, we're like, all right, we're going to do this. We didn't think we would stick with it after high school together. I mean, he did. He kept doing music without any pause. And for me, there was a real break and a pause for many years.
What was that like when you took your break? What did you think you were going to do?
I was so driven in school and really interested in academics and thriving in that world. At different points I was thinking about like doing work in Latin America, whether it was kind of development work or, working with, you know, trying to do something through the government. I think that I saw music as just so impractical in terms of like as a career choice. And so much of my brain was just like, I couldn't accept such an impractical thing for myself, or just, it seems so risky, and just like trying to build a life around like just the muse and like being inspired, and not, that just felt too scary and daunting to me. So I really closed that door. I think I was just like, that's not me, you know? And I think that there were enough other, the rewards and the kind of like, there's just a clear path when you're interested in academics and successful in that, and there's just like all these steps that kind of you just kind of go down the chute and it kind of keeps, you keep getting encouraged in that direction. And so it was easy to just kind of get swept away by that because I loved it. And I don't know. Yeah, I think it wasn't until I was, I mean, I kept coming back to it. It kept finding its way back in my life. But I think at different points, yeah, it's like, how do you do this and have a family and like have any normalcy in your life? How do you do this and like just have it? Yeah. Any stability or I don't know, these things that are all the reasons that people don't do it or stop or quit or, you know, but I think it just had to come back in a way that where I was like, I just have to do it. I just, if I don't do it, I'm going to regret it the rest of my life, you know? And I just like the way music kind of kept finding me and kept speaking to me and kept kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. Whispering me back in to be like, don't you want to be writing songs right now? Don't you want to be out performing? Don't you want to, you know, like I just got so much from it. And I think, I don't know. Yeah. So many of my tendencies were, I could just, it'd be really easy for me to just be in the library all day and like just be in the archives. And like, but when I was doing music, it just like, it got me out in the world. And it just like, it was like this, I could still have that interior world and the creative space that was very intimate and personal, but then it just forced me to also just be out in the world and engaged and kind of like just putting yourself out there and reaching out for connection and meeting people and just kind of getting out of my comfort zone. And so I think I just kept being drawn back for the way that it just shook me up in that way.
God, I think your story is such a great example of a truth that I first heard expressed by Bowie in an interview he gave Rolling Stone around the turn of the millennium. Unfortunately, it was the same interview where he said, I like every kind of music except country music, which I've never thought of myself as a country musician, but I suddenly imagined, oh no, Bowie would not like my music. But in that same interview, they were asking him about the collapse of the business model. You know, what would the future hold? Would we live in a world where people wouldn't make music when there wasn't money to be made, big money to be made? And the point that he made that I've found to be more and more true is that there will always be people to make music, and that probably it's a good thing when the money goes away, because then the gold rush ends. And then the people who are left making music are the people who have no other choice but to make music, like you described, like you just can't stop thinking about it. And so at the expense of all the other paths you could have chosen, this is the one you went down. And you did end up with a family. You've got two super cute kids. You've got a great little, you know, family unit there, and you're making it work.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, there's something about just like keeping the blade sharp. And that made me think of just how we've, I think it's like, yeah, there's not, I don't know. It's not, we were never going to do it because of the money or because of fame. Or I don't know. We're going to just like the kind of music I'm interested in is not going to put me in that place, you know, but I am really driven, and I want to build this catalog of songs, and I want to have, you know, a big band. I want to be able to tour with a big band when we do it. And, you know, but I think we've just, there's something about, because there's no money in it to some degree, it's like, there's, you're just like hustling so much and you're just keeping the blade sharp. And that is exciting for me. I just feel like I'm always trying to think of new ways for us to, I don't know, to connect with people, to make rent that month. And that keeps us kind of really on our toes in a way that I think is exciting. And I don't know. I mean, I have like a safety net, our parents are not going to let us starve. Like we have, you know, we're going to be okay. And I don't know. I've found this time of, I think for us, there's just, it feels like I feel like it's an incredible time to be making music right now, an incredible time to be a musician. I feel like for all the things that you could complain about the state of the industry or anything, I just think there's just like such a rich time for us to imagine what kind of life we want to have and build it right now. And to have that supported by the real diehard fans and to kind of like just all these creative ways to reach people and to get our music out there. So I feel like, if you're willing to kind of hustle and kind of keep trying to reimagine how you're doing it and what the opportunities are in each moment, I think it's an amazing time to be alive and making music.
I love that. I'm obsessed with silver linings during all of this, you know, and I think you guys have found a lot of those, and you've described a lot of those just in the last, you know, few minutes. But I think that's a really big one, is that right now we live in such a time of technology overload, and almost all of it is trying to sell you something, right? Trying to work you to be a customer of some giant corporation that doesn't care about you except as a potential customer. And music is at its best, and I think most of the time, something that's inherently just human connection. It's just building bridges between souls, right? And I love that. I think that you're right. And sometimes I lose sight of that. So it's nice to hear you say it, that music is really important right now, maybe more so than at any other time we've lived through.
Yeah, I think there is just something, there's like a meanness out there right now, I think, you know, that, and sometimes it's like, I don't know. It's just like people, I think music and like the empathy of kind of trying to get into someone else's head and see someone else's perspective, and just like what that does in terms of opening your heart up to hear someone being emotionally vulnerable, and to be moved by something beautiful that someone else makes. I don't know. Those just seem like more important than ever right now. So I feel really, it seems like, I think that because music exists in this like ethereal realm, like, you know, a spiritual realm, it was hard for my brain to be like, that was so practical, to kind of understand like, how do you measure it or justify it? Or, you know, like there is like this big leap of faith in it, and like giving your life over to music and to the art. But I feel like we've just kept, enough times along the way we've been rewarded, or in a way that was not financial, that was just like, yeah, just like the soul filling in terms of knowing what a difference it made for someone. And that's really kept us going.
Ever since I've known you, I feel like you've been really great about acknowledging your feelings and talking, like, you know, you and I have, even though we don't get to see each other very often, I feel like when we do, you're someone who I can always count on to be very real and acknowledge even sometimes when you're struggling. But I wonder like how you deal with that, like these sort of the internally generated obstacles, the noise that goes on in your head, the stories, the negative stories you tell yourself, the way that you beat yourself up inside, that we all beat ourselves up inside, especially perhaps artists. Mm-hmm. I wonder how you have figured out to deal with that.
It's definitely a work in progress. I think that, I don't know, some of it's, you know, like, I'm just so fortunate that I have a partner that has a much kind of wiser, more holistic approach that is less like Suze's identity is just less tied up in the band or the success of the band or what gigs we're getting or not getting. Like she cares, but some part of her is just kind of above it in a way. She's just like, it doesn't, you know, like she's just a more, just a wiser soul in that regard. And so I do lean into that a lot. I think when I am kind of in one of those like patterns in your mind that is negative or that is critical, or I don't know, like I think that there's been a part of me that, you know, like gets on Instagram, and before the pandemic it would be just like this negative spiral of like, why am I not playing that gig, or why am I not getting that opportunity? And Suze would ask something like, you know, do you really want to trade places with someone? Do you want to be playing their songs and like being that person? And like, no, I don't. Like, I want to be doing my songs. And like, she's always like, we're doing our thing, and we have to just kind of like put those blinders on and not like that. Does like, it's just kind of making that switch to just be able to celebrate other people's success and not have it be a reflection on where you are, have any bearing on where you are in life. I feel like that's just a constant thing, especially the nature of social media and the way we kind of interact with it. I think that, you know, it has, for me, it is kind of about getting lost in the work, I think, is also a way of coping with that. And just like, I think all these tools I've developed over the years to get into some flow with making music. And I think that one of the beauties of that is that it turns off that voice, you know, when I'm really in it. And to be in a song and be like working on a verse, or to be kind of chasing an initial inspiration where I know just I'm on the cusp of something and I'm just, you know, kind of like riffing and improvising and just like turning off the brain that's the critical judging voice. You know, I feel like then you're like, yeah, I'm lost in the experience and I'm not thinking about any of those negative things or the, I don't, yeah, all the things that aren't generative or are not, they're not helpful or productive. That's some of my coping mechanism.
Well, it's funny because when I started having these conversations, I kind of assumed that every single, especially musician, but every single artist that I spoke to, a creative type person, would talk about that feeling of envy, that feeling, I'm not sure if that's exactly what it is, but that feeling of looking at others and wondering, why not me? Why does this person get to play headline Red Rocks and I've only opened Red Rocks, or why does, you know, whatever, like all these, I mean, cause I know for me, like that's one of the worst, most nagging things. It's so hard to get rid of that feeling. And there are so few people that get to do the truly amazing things. And it's, I love her message that she gives to you, right? Like, you only get to live your life. Would you really want to be that other person? Because I, you know, I've known some of those people that I've been jealous of. And once I really know them, no way. No, thank you. I'll take my life and my kids and my weird little, you know, middle-class house. This is great.
Yeah. I think there's something about, I had a creative writing teacher, this amazing novelist, Bruce Benderson, tell me this when I was younger, where it was like, you never know like how you're going to actually make your way in the arts, you know, like you just like for, you know, like for you to like have, like now you're just like the last year, how many live streams you've done or like doing the podcast or writing the books. Like there's so many, this multifaceted rich life that you're being engaged creatively in the world. And I think for us, it's like, you know, I think because we've been at a certain level that's never gone to that stratosphere, but we've always kind of kept it afloat. Like that's opened up a lot of different avenues for us to be a band and be creative people, and for Suze to work on different writing projects, for us to, you know, do this. Before the pandemic, one of the most exciting things we were doing was these shows where we would blindfold the audience. And it's like, it has to be small. You can only get 50 people in there. And so it just instantly frames your brain in a different way, where you're not about like, oh, we have to sell all these tickets and we have to be in front of people in the spotlight. It's like, no, we're going to have to get 50 people who want to be present in the songs and listening in a different way. And I think that, you know, maybe that came out of our experience of kind of seeing, like when you're talking about silver linings, like every time there's a problem or a crisis, it's like, what's the opportunity there for you? And for us, it's like, if there's a shitty sound system, it's like, all right, we're just going to get off the stage and start playing in the middle of the room. And we've always kind of had that mentality of like, how do we make the most of this opportunity? We can't get a gig anywhere. So, all right, we're going to do a house concert and we're going to like get 50 people in a house and like win each of them over. And so I think we've had that mentality all along. And then so for us to be like, well, what if we really want people to listen and not be distracted and to be as present as possible in the show, like what if we just blindfold them and we like, you know, they're in the room in this like configuration where we can walk around them and sing in their ear and sing harmonies from across the room and like have them be right next to the acoustic guitar and have the song move around them. And it's been amazing. I just feel like I've been doing this for now kind of professionally as for 14 years. And this is like the time where when we do these golden hour shows, to like just see people weeping during the show is like, it's just, I don't know, there's nothing like it. And I've found that just like it cuts through in a different way to people, because we just, I think it removes these assumptions about the way that we experience live music and the way that we kind of have a performer on stage and lights and we're kind of like jostling for a good view and kind of, I don't know, just checking our phones and all the things that people do at a show that even if they really want to be there, there's just so much pulling on them. I can't wait to get to do that again when we can gather people.
And I know. That's so brilliant. When you first described that to me, I just thought, why is that not something people have been doing forever? Because it's such a brilliant idea. But I do think that maybe you're right. Like, it's just since the telephones have taken over our lives and this sort of, this competition for who's got the best looking life. And so, yeah, I love that. I love that you do that. Also, you can rifle through their purse too.
Yeah, that's great. It's, yeah.
Okay, so finally, I love asking this of folks that are raising tiny humans of their own now, because it's a question that becomes like something you're going to have to really deal with. If you were to run into a 21-year-old version of yourself, but working in today's world. Now, you knowing what you know now, what advice might you give that 21-year-old version of you?
Some of it's along the lines that we've been talking about, where it's like, I wish if I'd been 21 and started recording myself then and learning how to just kind of have that, it's so empowering. And I think that for so long, I just felt like this reliance on other people to be able to have that studio experience, which is one of those things when you're in a band, you're young, it's like, it's just the best. And it's still the best. I love it so much. And so, I just wish I would have just at an early age started doing that. I think those kids that are like, just record themselves and are so, so comfortable and in their element working with that part of making music. I just feel, that's just such a gift to have that be part kind of integrated into your musical psyche. I think on a less kind of like that nitty gritty, level, I think that one of the things that I've found over the years is that, especially as someone like me who looks for mentors and looks for advice and asks people that are kind of further along for advice, I think that it took me too long to realize that, people are going to do the best they can in terms of giving you advice, but ultimately, like, you just have to trust your gut. And I think that it was hard in the early days when we got started, where I think we just were looking for so much, outside guidance of like, how are we going to do this? And everybody was trying to help us, but it's like, especially in the arts and in the music industry, it's just like, it's been so in flux and nobody really knows what's coming or how everybody's going to like create their own path in this. And so if someone gives you advice, it's just, you have to hear it and really listen, but ultimately trust your gut when it comes to the kind of decisions about how you're going to build your life and your career. I wish I would have kind of known that earlier about how to just like that nagging feeling where like people are like, everybody's saying we should do this thing, but something's not feeling right about that. And I just wish I, at different points, I could have trusted that feeling more.
Boy, that's true. There's no one clear path. And how could anybody tell you how to be you, right? I remember meeting you, how many years ago would that have been now? 12?
Yeah, probably 12 years ago.
And being blown away by you guys playing as a duo. And we were talking about stuff and you were young and you were getting started. And I remember I gave you a piece of advice that I feel like I've always regretted. And I don't exactly remember what it was, but I think the gist of it was you should play down the folk Mexican folk music angle of your stuff, because that's just going to seem off-putting. I think I said something like that to you, that I thought I was being like really like nuts and bolts. Like, okay, let me tell you how it's been. You know, I've been sick of being tagged with being a country Texas guy. You don't want to be like the Mexican folk music guy. And then I've watched your career and I've been like, what an idiot I was. Like, what do I even know? And everything that you've done has been so beautifully unique and so much you that, I don't know if you even remember that at all, but I'm glad you didn't listen to me.
I wasn't like secretly referencing some advice you gave 12 years ago, but I do remember. I mean, I was touched because you called me and we like, you know, to like, I've just looked up to you for so many years and been such a fan. I mean, we covered the old 97s in high school and, you know, so that you just cared enough to like have an opinion and want to talk and want to be helpful. I think that's what I took out of it. Not as like, he knows what I should, you know, like, and I think that it's, I heard that as like, yeah, like the things that you have run into for your own career, wishing you'd known and wishing someone had kind of been like, well, just think about, just be consider about how you kind of, who you kind of frame, how you frame yourself, because you can kind of, when you're so young, you still want to express yourself in all these different ways and all these different parts of your artistic identity. You kind of just don't give them the box to pigeonhole you with, you know?
Yeah. So, like you can hope that the people who have the power to pigeonhole you would accept nuance. Right. But typically those people, they don't like, that's anathema to them. They don't. Yeah. Okay. So what you said, you do something with Mexican music. Are you from Texas? So you're just country. All right.
Yeah. David, no, but I don't. Never listen to you. No, I mean, I just, when I was thinking about talking to you for this, I got emotional because I was just like, I just don't know if anyone's helped us out as much along the way as you have.
Stop.
You know? No, I just like, I feel like people have helped us and that's why we're here, like along the way. But first, I feel like you've kind of gone the extra mile at every point to be like, hey, can I introduce you to this person? Like bringing us on tour, introducing us to your audience, you know, just like taking that extra leap. And I think that's a testament to a lot of things about your character and just like the way you engage with this whole musical community and life in general. So I'm very grateful for everything you've done for us and just that love that you put out into the community and it's meant the world to me.
So. Oh man. Well, you're embarrassing me, but you're also making me tear up a little bit. I really love what you do and I love you guys as human beings. And I'm so glad that I get to have you on Wheels Off and we just get to be, you know, two musicians who've devoted our lives to this thing and have had some success and are also living real lives with, you know, families and making it work somehow. I'm so proud of you. And I think the world of you, David. Thank you so much for being on Wheels Off with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Red. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.